All right, guys, welcome back to Beyond the Barbell. I'm Ben Alderman.
And I'm Blair Morrison. We're sitting here with Matt Chan, the Redux. Matt Chan.
Glad to be here for the second time.
No longer at your mountain house.
Nope.
But here at the CrossFit Games.
Yes.
Home away from home.
Yep.
As you were for you. How's it going here?
Good, man. It's been a pretty cool week so far. I've actually... It was tough at first. I'll be honest with you. You know, even though I missed last year, it felt a little different coming this year with really no role at all. And I got to admit, I felt a little lost at first, kind of just sitting around and chilling and kind of waiting for things to happen. And in reality, I'm a spectator now. So that really kind of sunk in this week. And I think I'm kind of happy about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watching people do... the 7K trail run, Murph, those things, imagining how difficult it must be for them.
Right, of course. I mean, you know, would we all love to participate in those workouts in that scenario with that sort of attention and with all that hoopla around it? Yeah, of course. But at the same time, I think it's pretty darn neat to just sit back, watch it all go down, and appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, are you saying that you're happy that you're kind of watching just because of the workouts that are coming out, or just kind of because this you just feel comfortable there now?
No, that's kind of where I'm at now. You know, I think where I'm at currently is, you know, I'm lucky enough to have had a very successful CrossFit competitive career. You know, 6 out of the 10 years I've been here. I'm cool with that. I stood on the podium. I went to regionals even an extra year that I didn't qualify for the games. I mean, I think I ran the gamut of what my athletic potential was amongst the competitors that I was competing against. And I think right now I'm just outaged, outclassed. I think they're on a whole new level.
So you said last year you were here not competing, but you kind of had more of an established role. Last year, what was that?
Yeah, let me think about it. What was I doing last year? Yeah, I'm not even sure if I was doing much of anything, but I was involved. I did stuff for Reebok, I did stuff for Progenics, and I did stuff for Rogue. Kind of bounced back and forth, as well as kind of hanging out inside some of the media stuff and talking to all those guys. I just felt like I was more involved last year, and I was really busy all the time. But this year, I got here, and I was like, well, there's really nothing pushing me out of the hotel right now. I don't even know what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's got to be kind of nice, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
So I want to go back maybe to, was it your last year competing where you went to regionals, but you didn't qualify for the games, is that correct?
2015,
yeah. Was that last year?
Yeah, that was last year.
Yes. Yep. Okay, here we are, last year. What was that like competing at regionals last year?
Well, let me set the stage. You know, the previous year I had rocked my leg. Basically, it came down to I was lucky to keep my leg. So recovering took a long time.
Can you, before you go too far, can you talk about lucky to keep your leg? What does that mean?
Yeah, so I had an accident on a mountain bike on the 4th of July, 2014. Sheree and I were just out riding at a local mountain bike area, and I just kind of slipped up, lost focus for a second, and when I fell onto my handlebars, which actually crushed the right branch of my femoral artery. And it was a closed wound. I didn't bleed outside of my skin, but it basically looked like a gigantic water balloon of blood underneath my inner thigh. And, you know, I knew something was wrong pretty much right away. And Sheree and I called 911. Boulder Search and Rescue came out, got me out of there, flew me out to a level 1 trauma center, and went into immediate surgery. And they said, right as they wheeled me in, they're like, hey, look, we're going to do everything we can to save your leg. And it's like,
that's a possibility now.
So, okay.
Jeez, okay.
Yeah, I was not aware of that. And, you know, when I woke up, you know, I don't remember any of this, but Sheree said that's all I asked about it. Do I still have a leg? And it took a while to recover from that injury, months. And, you know, I still didn't have the same stamina in my leg because of the decreased vasculature and perfusion of the muscle tissue. So when 2014 season started and rolled into 2015, I really didn't even think about competing at all. But I did the Open, and I did well enough in the Open. I think I ended up in 12th in my region that I qualified for our super region. And, yeah, it would have been an amazing comeback, right, to have all that happen in a period of a year. But I took 9th place. You know, I'll just throw this out there. I beat Zach Forrest.
Ah,
you burned.
No, but I was pretty stoked to come in ninth place for that region and for that level of competition. I mean, who could complain?
No, and you talk about how long the physical recovery took, but your mental perspective on like just being happy to squat or run or anything, that's got to take a little bit of the edge away from competing for a spot at the CrossFit Games, doesn't it? I mean, I would think if I went through that level of trauma and injury and recovery, I'm like, you just seem like you're happy
to
be there.
Yeah, you have that in your mind as you walk in. But then once you're there, you guys know how it is. That competition mode takes over. And, you know, me personally, I was thinking, okay, I'm going.
I can do it.
I can do this. And in reality, it just wasn't there. Like, the stamina issues, I always have to work on my pressing. So, like, you know, handstand push-ups, that event really, you know, started off really awesome, going really well. But, you know, it just, you know, towards the end of that fifth round, it really showed that I hadn't done the hard work as long as I should have throughout that year. And, you know, I mean, I'm happy with where I was. I look back even at this year, though, you know, and I watch those top five guys. It's like, man, I can beat those guys. I know I can.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everybody's an armchair quarterback. And, you know, when you're on the competition floor, it's shocking how high of a level of competition it is.
Right.
Can't take that for granted. We can all armchair quarterback, you know, the top five in our region and say, yeah, we could have beat them. I have better numbers or whatever. But in reality, those guys are crushing it out there. Crushing it.
So are you saying that you're retired, fully retired?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. If I feel good this year, I'll give it a shot. You know, I'm definitely going to do the Open 100%. I did it this year.
Nice.
When the, you know, Masters rolls around, if my body feels pretty good, I'm gonna hit that. You know, that's only...
It might be next year.
How does that work? Okay, so I'm 38 right now. I turned 39 in February.
You would not be eligible for the 40s.
I have another year.
Yeah. But there's...
You have to be 40 by the time you're a games athlete.
Yeah, the 35 to 40 Masters category may be announced for next year.
Yeah.
So you would definitely qualify for that.
Well, I wouldn't say definitely, but I would say I would definitely try.
Well, I'm not saying qualify. You'd definitely be in the field.
Right, okay.
Eligible.
Yes. Yeah.
Eligible for that.
Definitely be eligible.
So what does your training look like these days then, if you know, for you?
Training. So I started a program... with a guy named Eric O'Connor, who's a CrossFit Level 1 and Level 2 seminar staff member, co-author of the competitor course with me.
And OG.
OG. Been to the games 3 times. And we started a program called Train for the Win. It's got 3 tracks. I do the stamina track. It's really cool. It's intended to fall within a 90-minute window on a daily basis so that, you know, we do control the volume, unlike a lot of other programs, so that maybe this is a more long-term program. Rather than fry you out in 2 years and hope that you don't blow up. Our approach is, hey, if I can't fit it in 90 minutes, you probably shouldn't be doing it.
I love that. I'm on a 90-minute for 90-day challenge of myself because I'm one of those guys. Like Blair will tell you, I don't want to tell you what I did on Monday.
You would be so disappointed in Ben.
Yeah.
Long or short?
Long.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I mean, like, let's face it, and you were probably wrecked afterwards from it for the whole day. And maybe even the next day.
Yeah.
And how do you train at a high level when you're constantly beating yourself down with long workouts and excessive volume?
Let me ask you this. In a 90-minute span, what's a healthy number of glute ham sit-ups?
For
an elite athlete.
A healthy amount?
Better question, what's an unhealthy amount?
Okay, I think anything over 100 on a consistent basis is too much. I think 75 to 100... can be included in a workout and used as maintenance. I don't think 99.99% of athletes need to go above 75 to 100 repetitions of a GHD sit-up.
So okay. I fall outside the standard deviation.
Yeah,
that.
What would you think about 450 in
a
workout?
No, come on, Ben, really? How are your hip flexors?
They're a little tight.
A little bit, huh?
They're a little tight.
My issue with that is that GHD sit-ups are great, and I think everybody should do them in small doses and work up in those doses. But... I personally have experienced hip flexor tightness to the point where I think it contributes to potential back injuries. And it's just, you know, people's psoas and rectus femoris shortens, and if you get caught up in a hyperextended position and you walk around with a little bit of that that position, then you're putting yourself at risk.
True.
Weigh the value.
Hey, man, I want to maintain good posture.
Yeah.
I don't want this excessive Bordotic curve. That's where you're headed, buddy.
Yeah.
450 GHDs, you're asking for it.
Bro, careful. You act like I do that all the time.
Well, if I didn't tell you how bad it was, you might.
No, I wouldn't.
It's
my job on the show. I figured that out.
Thanks, Blair.
This is about Matt, all right? Let's make this about Matt.
All right, back to Matt. Speaking of Matt's training, last time we saw you, you were chainsawing things and in between sets of, what was it?
I don't remember. Oh, reverse hypers.
Reverse hypers.
Yeah.
You get a couple of reverse hypers in between chainsawing logs. Do you try to, now that you're semi-retired, not competing hard every day, do you do more outdoor stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so you guys asked me if I'm retired. Really, currently, until I hit 40, I would say the answer is probably yes. I don't consider myself a competitive CrossFit athlete anymore.
How old are you now? 38?
38.
38.
Yeah, I'll be 39 later this or early next year. And because of that, all the stuff that I put off having fun with, you know, the reasons I moved to Colorado in the first place, mountain biking, skiing, climbing, all that stuff, right? I put it off for the last bunch of years so that I could focus solely on CrossFit and improve at CrossFit and just kind of touch that stuff throughout the year. Well, now Sheree and I are finally getting an opportunity to do that on a regular basis. We just spent a week in Crested Butte. We brought dumbbells and a sled, didn't use them. We ended up riding over 80 miles that week, mountain bike trails that we have had on the list for literally probably 10 years, and it was so special. I mean, it really was. It was just one of those weeks that, like, so happy to be alive and so happy to be married to my wife. You know, it was just so great. So catching up on a lot of that stuff. But I still do CrossFit pretty much 5 days a week. Still do a little bit of powerlifting pretty much 4 days a week. And it's been an absolute blast to not have the pressure to always work on gymnastics and cardio-based movements and to just go ahead and powerlift.
Do the things that you like to do,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you notice you're still making gains in those areas now that you've kind of circled back to them?
The weightlifting stuff?
Yeah.
No, you know, I mean, I really, the knee injury caused a few issues, I'm sorry, the leg injury caused a few issues, like a knee injury and a back injury, that I got to really just be careful. So I just have fun with it. I don't push myself, following the conjugate method. So, you know, twice a week I max, but my maxes are maxes for the day.
You feel you can do that day.
Exactly, yeah.
You're not like pushing hard on percentages or anything like that.
Nah, I'm not concerned.
You're doing all your outdoor stuff and like you said, getting to these things that you've had on your bucket list,
yep.
You and your wife. Do you feel like your injuries are like limiting you at all in those areas? Like you say, like, all right, I want to go mountain biking. I can do 80 miles in a week. That's pretty legit, man.
Yeah, but at the end of the week, I got to admit, my knee and ankle on my right leg, which is the leg I injured, were definitely a little beat up. And I think what happens is because I had what's called a fasciotomy. The fascia surrounds your muscle tissue, and a fasciotomy cuts the casing of your fascia around your muscle to allow the muscle to swell, because I had lost all pulses in my lower leg when I had that injury. So they cut me in three different spots so that my leg could swell and my leg could again begin to perfuse. So what happened now is I don't have that fascia covering those three spots.
And I don't put it back?
It's sliced. I don't think they can actually stitch fascia.
It's too thin, or
It's like a film, basically.
Yeah.
Like how does your brain communicate with your leg? Right? Isn't the fascia really important for that?
That's not your nerves. So your fascia isn't involved with your nerves. So you still have nerve endings firing your muscle tissue.
Right.
The fascia, however, does provide compression, which causes a decrease in swelling and an increase in strength and stamina.
Gotcha.
Without that, I might be good for a day or a series of back squats or so on and so on. But what happens is that as I continue to swell, as I continue to try to push swollen muscle tissue, my joints take the brunt of that. So my ankle and my knee have been a consistent problem. And then I favor the opposite side, which then causes back issues.
Right. Because you're all off kilter.
That's right. So at the end of the week, this last week, when I was riding with Sheree, my leg was super duper swollen, and we backed off on the last day, and we did a nice 2 mile float down the Slate River in Crested Butte. It was awesome.
That sounds great.
It was. It's so good.
So we talked that you're having to back off a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But in reality, I think if most people sustain the injury that you had, their life would look drastically different than yours, because your fitness is kind of give you that hedge that we talk about a lot.
Yep.
Right? To allow you to still have the freedom to do some of this stuff. Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, the example that Ben's talking about is we talk about at the level one, you know, the sickness, wellness, fitness continuum. And the closer you are to sick, well, you got nowhere to go but down from there. And when you're already sick, the next step is really decrepitude or death. And when you're really fit, you have that wellness as a hedge. And luckily enough, I mean, I was super, super fit in 2014 when I had the injury. And I slipped a little bit, but I mean, within three, four months, I snatched 300 pounds for the first time. So I didn't slip that much, obviously.
No, I guess not.
Yeah, that was a cool video. I remember watching that on CrossFit's main Instagram or CrossFit Games Instagram page. It's
pretty
cool.
It was one of those things where when it happened, it was like, I'm lucky to have recorded it, number one. That's what I was thinking, like, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. And then literally I went back inside and I really got pretty emotional about it, because it's one of those benchmarks. You know, 300-pound snatch is like, it's a benchmark. And it really brought up how the last 10 years of hard work doing CrossFit and building fitness saved my life. It really did. You know, it saved my longevity. And, yeah, I'm even getting a little choked up thinking about it now. You know, I mean, hey, all that hard work, you know, even though I didn't make it to the CrossFit Games this year, it saved my life. And there's no way to understate that. It's you know, hey, get really fit so you don't become really sick overnight. That's it.
Do you think enough, I mean, I think everyday CrossFitters probably think about this more than the athletes do, right? That their fitness is defense. Defense against injury, defense against sickness.
Really? I don't know if I agree with that.
You think athletes think about that?
Oh, I'm saying they don't. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying they don't.
Yeah, I don't.
I think everyday people think about it more than the athletes do.
I don't even think they do either.
Really?
I think that the everyday individuals that participate in our program really would like to, they aspire to be either competitors themselves or look like competitors. They want to have the body and physique of a competitor, which, hey, you see these guys, who doesn't, right?
Right.
But I agree with you. I think that in reality, a large dosing of scaling on a regular basis is going to keep our athletes and our clients more compliant with our program for a longer period of time, and then they're going to have that edge that they can fall back on. When you push things too fast, we all know what happens. You risk injury, right? If I push a deadlift that I'm not quite ready for, I'm putting myself at risk, okay? Whereas if I take a 5-pound PR as opposed to a 50-pound PR, it's a smarter way to approach it, and I'm going to last longer because of it, and I'll PR for a longer lifetime.
Yeah, sure. I think that a lot of times we don't see that. We just see what's right in front of us, right? And you
look
at the barbell right next to you, and you're like, man, that guy lifted that, and I should be able to do that. So you just load it up. But the reality is we want to work out for a long time.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, I tell people all the time at my gym, I say, hey, I really enjoy eating. I said, and I would be – unfortunately, I would be really large if I did not work out, right? So, and I'm probably going to eat – that's one of my battles, right? I'm going to have that battle my whole life.
Yep.
And so if I don't work out, I'm going to have a real hard time.
Yep.
So it's like important for us to make sure that we're using a fitness program that allows us to continue to do it day after day, week after week, month after month.
And let's face it. I mean, come on. I remember growing up and hearing people recommend 30 to 60 minutes of exercise per day, right? What are we doing? We're doing 60 minutes of exercise, and in reality, within that 60 minutes, we're not even active for that full 60 minutes. So, I mean, our program is the perfect program to maintain a reasonable amount of exercise for a long period of time. But when people go into the gym and they start doing these competitive programs right as their baseline, I don't think that they have the right – they've got the right intention, but the wrong direction.
What type of timeline do you think most – athletes or CrossFitters need to build up to that type of program volume?
I think a good way to judge it is if you can do every workout on CrossFit.com as prescribed, then you can start doing those workouts. And when I say as prescribed, I also mean with the same stimulus intention. So, hey, I can do Fran, you know, with 95 pounds and chin over the bar pull-ups, but it takes me 13 minutes. Well, that's not the intention of Fran, right? That's not the intention. The intention is a flaming hot burrito wrapped in a tiny package that's completed in 6 minutes.
I love it. A flaming hot burrito.
Yeah. Well, you guys know. Come on.
Yeah, wrapped in a tiny package. Yeah, no, totally. I think that it's one thing that I talk about volume, and I actually mentioned earlier about the 90 minutes for 90 days,
yep,
is bringing my volume back down and constricting it to the 90 minutes. You know what I mean? Because I think that it's easy, even for somebody like myself who's been doing it for a long time, you're going to want to jump into more volume and more excessiveness. And it's like, it's not always beneficial. You know, if you're not one of these guys out here, right? Like, and even for these guys, it might not be beneficial.
Hey, let's face it. The 99% of athletes that enter the Open that don't qualify for the CrossFit Games are shooting to go to regionals. And all you need to do is perform at the Open. The Open is one workout a week. It's one workout a week, not seven in a day. So, yes, it does take time to build the skills and drills, and adding volume can help you build those skills and drills faster. But nothing replaces intensity, because that's what's required in the Open. So what I typically see with the athletes that, you know, write me emails or I'm working with on nutrition is they're doing a lot of this stuff and they're doing it in high doses, but all of it is low intensity. And what we tell people at the competitor course is the way to pepper in more volume is maximize your intensity in the workout that you're doing, and then pepper a little bit more in there. And if you can maintain that same intensity in that workout, that second session or that second component of the workout, then accommodate to that. You know, to have your body adapt to that, continue with it. And then you can add a little bit more. But the second your intensity in one of those two parts or those two sessions goes down, you're doing the wrong thing. You're doing the wrong thing. Your body's not ready for that. You get more benefit out of increasing your intensity in just a single session.
Where do you see the lower intensity training having a place? Just for skills and drills?
I think skills and drills are a great one. I think accessory work to bring weaknesses up to speed. For instance, you know, I'm not the greatest presser in the world. You know, when you compare my numbers, you know, strength numbers, my bench isn't the strongest. My shoulder press isn't the strongest, and it shows in my handstand pushups as well. So I'll try to bring my my pressing up to speed. I've identified that my triceps are generally the weak part in the link. So I'll do accessory work, you know, related to the triceps afterwards, and I'll bring some intensity or some extra volume to that, right? But what I'm not trying to do is another Grace or another Murph in addition to something where it's just going to be excessive volume and not really targeted towards anything.
It's not doing what it was supposed to do.
No.
Right.
All right, well, switch gears a little bit here, and about 6 or 7 years ago, when I first learned who Matt Chan was, I don't think you had as many tattoos, my friend.
I just got tattooed yesterday.
Where at?
What'd you get?
All right, here we go.
I was going to ask you, what's your next tattoo? And here's his freshest tattoo.
Oh
yes.
Pants
here's
are
the video.
Down.
Video this. That is
That
sick.
Looks like a Indian chief.
That is.
Hello.
Wow. Man.
All right. Let's
go with
explain.
Why the Indian chief? Other than that, it looks cool.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah.
No, honestly, I saw this guy's painting. I follow a lot of tattoo artists on Instagram. I think Instagram is probably the best thing that's happened for tattoo artists. But
oh, for sure.
Right?
Yep.
You get to see so much art and who you like and all that stuff and these styles that you're drawn to. And I'm fully in on that. I follow probably more tattoo artists than I do CrossFitters or CrossFit Games athletes or anything. And this guy named Travis Burton posted a painting that he did last week. And I was like, oh my gosh, look at that. That's beautiful. Oh my God. And it's just up my alley. I like the style and the shading and the color palette that he uses. And I contacted him. I'm like, there's no way that you're going to be available on Thursday, is there? Knowing full well that most CrossFit Games Thursdays are an off day. And he's like, yeah, I got time at 1:30. What are you thinking? And
he's local here in LA?
He's in Hollywood, yeah.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so I was like, he's like, yeah, I'm ready to do that. I was like, I'd love to do that painting you posted the other day. And he's like, I would love to tattoo that painting. You'd be the first person to have it. I was like, yes!
Nice. Yep. Have you had work done by him before?
Nope.
No, just contacted him and he hooked you up.
Yep.
Love it, man.
Yeah, followed him for probably a good year just because I like his work. But, yeah, that's how I do it. Is I'm lucky enough to travel all over the place. So if I follow somebody, you know, for instance, I want to work in Austin. I've been waiting for Austin forever because there's a tattoo artist in Austin that I really would like to get tattooed by.
Go there a couple days early and schedule an appointment and sit down for a couple hours. And
yep.
Nice. So is a tattoo, the love of tattoos, is it new or is it something you've had for a long, long time?
I got my first tattoo in 2008 after the CrossFit Games. Before the CrossFit Games.
That was your first tattoo?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the big side one?
That's the one.
Yep.
The one with the heart dripping down?
Yep. And I always said, it's got to have so much meaning. It's got to be this. It's got to be that. And as soon as I got that tattoo, I was like, oh, I'm going to get all sorts of tattoos. I don't even care what they are. I love this.
I always hear that from people. They say they need to have like so much meaning. I say, hey, whatever meaning you want your tattoo to have, it will always fall slightly short. So if you really like it, just get it anyway.
Yep.
Right? It's like, oh, I got this one for my wife. She's like, oh, that's cool. I like it. But my bond with my wife is actually better, you know, than the tattoo.
Oh, of course.
Tattoo can't fully
It can't fully express it. So you just... If you like them, just get them.
Get them.
Right?
Yeah, be aware of what you're getting into, though. I mean, if you've never gotten one before, it's painful.
Yeah. My birthday's on Monday, bro, and I'm like, I told my wife, I'm like, I'm getting a tattoo. And she's like, all right. You know, so
where at?
I'm going to get my forearm done.
Nice.
Yeah, we're going to go with a crown and a lion.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yeah, big.
Back to what you said, tattoos hurt so much.
They really do.
Like so much.
Yep.
Do you have any branding? Do you know what that is? Branding?
Yes, I do know what it is, and no, I have not, but I would tell you what, I'd give it a shot.
I'd give it a shot.
Yeah, it does look cool. I mean,
Morrison.
Look at Blair Morrison. What a man.
Just four coat hangers to the tricep.
Is that what it was? It's coat hangers?
Yeah.
How bad was it?
It was bad. I was slightly affected by alcohol, which helped.
Yep.
But it's short. So I'd say, I always tell people, tattoo hurts way worse because it's just over and over and over again. Yep. You know?
The needle goes back and forth.
Back and forth, man. And like the shading, scratching. It's like, if you do that whole thing in one session.
Yeah, it's 4 hours.
That's about the max.
It is.
Right? Four hours is about the max.
Yep. How hungry were you afterwards?
Starving.
Yeah,
I actually ate while he was tattooing me.
But yeah, the brand is over. It's 4 seconds of hot, hot pain, and then it's over. You know? And then I did it four times, but... It's like, it's different. It smells funny, and the healing process is way worse than the
tattoo. Burning skin is not a pleasant smell.
It's gross.
It's like blood. Blood smells so bad.
It's so weird.
The iron smell or whatever that is.
That's cool. Do you have a favorite tattoo?
You know, I think that first one is probably the most meaningful to me. And it was cool. I mean, first off, it's people ask me all the time, what does it mean? What does it mean? What's a big blob of black and the heart in the middle mean? Love amongst chaos. And at the time, my wife and I were going through a lot of tough stuff. You know, she lost a pregnancy really far along. We had just opened CrossFit Verve. I worked at a fire station and I worked at REI, and she was in school, and our life was literally in chaos. And we argued, and what saved us was just, hey, I love you. You love me. We can drop all this shit. We can walk away from it. So that's definitely the most meaningful to me. And, you know, it's cool because I think a lot of people kind of recognize me for that tattoo, which is kind of cool, too. You know, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, very cool. I think a lot of tattoos are kind of born of adversity, like the first ones especially,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Like people get like some major life event that they overcome, or they did something like that, and they're just so stoked. They just, I gotta do something to kind of consummate that victory or that pull through, you know?
Yeah, I've said that was my favorite tattoo that I've seen on anybody else.
Oh, cool.
It just, I didn't know the backstory until now, but it kind of get the sense of what it means. It's something, it's about love. It's about something that's important to you.
Yep.
And it's distinctive. You know, it's not like a copycat tattoo of something else that you've seen. So I think it's really cool.
Thanks.
I also like the way tattoos represent stories and memories. But I'm sure you have a lot of other memories now that we're at the CrossFit Games. Let's talk about some of those.
Yeah.
Like, you've been there six times. You're passionate about it. You've, like, dedicated a chunk of your life to pursuing this highest level of competition in CrossFit. Do you have some specific memories that are special to you from this event?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first and foremost, I mean, it's so great to just be amongst our community of people. You know, like... I love being here. I love the passion that people have about CrossFit, and you can just see it. You can read it on their faces that they're not upset about being here. They're not upset about, you know, having a great time and taking their shirt off and, you know, letting it go a little bit, having beers and stuff like that. So I think every CrossFit Games just being here is a memory in itself. But for me, one of the biggest memories that I have was standing on the podium in 2012 because... You know, I worked out for 90 minutes a day that entire year. I never did more than that. And I worked my ass off on my weaknesses. And some of those training sessions just stunk. I just hated doing them. But I worked with a great coach. He really helped me out. He guided me. He said, hey, you don't need to do more. And when I got here and it all started playing out on the scoreboard, it was like, okay, I'm six events in. I'm in the top five. I got to push. I can't let up. This is attack mode. And, man, I was close. I mean, I almost beat him. I almost beat him, you know? He got me on Fran, which definitely chopped my points pretty badly at the end there. But, I mean, like, he and I just went back and forth, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2 on those last bunch of events, you know, throughout the last few days. And I can honestly say, you know, A, it's really cool to stand on the podium with the group of people that I did.
Who was third that year?
Kyle Kasperbauer.
Kasperbauer, that's
yeah,
right.
And he was a legit competitor that entire weekend.
Yeah. Yep.
But I can honestly say that, you know, it was great to see my hard work pay off over a series of years leading up to that point and be one of the few people to stand on the podium at the CrossFit Games.
I got to ask you, with that in mind, are there any years that you felt like you were better prepared to win than that year? You know, because there's always random things like a judging error or maybe a slip-up or a mental mistake that prevents you from maybe being able to execute the way you wanted to.
Yeah.
Are there any years where you felt like you were more prepared than that, or is that the year where you're like, hey, it all came together and it was perfect?
Yeah, that was it. That was it. Yeah. You know, in fact, I just had this conversation a couple times this weekend already. I made a major mistake in 2013. Man, I trained hard. I trained really, really hard in 2013. I was on the road with Cherie in the Airstream, which kind of put a damper on training a little bit, but it was still a great year of training for me. But when I got here, I made a major mistake that I had never made before. I went over to the Best Buy and I bought a PlayStation. And I was my plan was to use that in the downtime to settle myself and to take my focus off the competition. But it did just that. It took my focus off the competition. And it could have been anything. It could have been watching movies. It could have been hanging out with friends. It could have been talking on the phone. But I lost my focus on the competition, which in 2012, there's no way anybody took my attention off of anything but the next event. And I sat there and played nerdy video games all weekend long, and my scores showed it. It was mediocre all weekend. I had no focus. So I really feel like that was a big mistake that I could have been. I could have potentially been in that top, at least in the top 10. And it didn't happen, and it's because I lost my focus. So don't make the same mistake, kids.
Video games, terrible for you.
Yeah, kill you.
Well, I was really curious about that because I feel like there's everything has to come together in order to have a year like you did. So
down to the last minute.
Yeah.
And you know what? This is funny. So, like, I'm not going to say names, but I've talked to athletes this weekend already that it's like, what's going on? What's happening here? Come on, pick it up. And you can't talk to an athlete. You can't get in an athlete's head like that during their weekend. And it's really hard to motivate people. But at the same time, dude, you've been working for this all year long so hard. You've sacrificed personal relationships, social activities, fun. You've put yourself through an enormous amount of pain. Get your shit together. Get out there. What are you doing? Step it up. And it's hard to hear that when you're the athlete in that scenario and you're watching your score slip after one or two events, right?
Yeah.
But in reality, you need that focus.
Yeah. We talked about this the other day with Becca, how in the first couple of events, if they go well, almost unexpectedly well, that momentum carries you. It almost gives you hyper-focus on the next event. But the same is true in the opposite side. Like, you have to be very mentally strong to overcome a poor performance. Or maybe, I think actually a mediocre performance is probably the worst thing. If you have a really bad performance, say like Sam Dancer did, last place on the 7K run. Like, you're in last place, you're almost just saying F it at that point. Like, I'm just going to go for it. But if you get a mediocre performance, it kind of puts you into like a malaise as an athlete.
Yep.
You're just like, just kind of going through the motions, trying to survive. And that's, you're right, that you can't have that mentality, especially not now.
Well, you also need to, I mean, what's in the past is in the past. And you really got to look at what you can affect in, you know, as far as stimulus goes, you got to look at what you can actually affect and get your outcome in the long run, right? I can't affect what happened 10 minutes ago or the event before or, you know, the day before or whatever. I can't affect that stuff. All I can do is look at what's coming. and give everything I have. And I think the best athletes at the CrossFit Games that end up consistently in the top 10, they know that. They're, you know what? Hey, that wasn't my event. It's time to move on. Shake it off. Brush it off my shoulder. Let's go. Next event.
Who's your favorite guy to watch do that over the course of your career? Like, who is the best at that?
I think Chris Feeler is, you know, because of Chris's size, you know, I got to tell you, I'm a Chris Feeler fan. You know, I mean, he's the opposite of me, right? He's small, and he will put himself through hell to complete a task. And, you know, I think we've watched Chris be on the bottom for some workouts and then be on the top for some workouts that you're like, he does not belong there. How is this even possible? And I think, to me, he's one of the most inspiring athletes to watch in the CrossFit community because of that. And, you know, it's a shame that he's retired, but I'm going to try to drag him back into it as soon as Masters rolls around. I keep making fun of him. He's like, no, I could never. But it's like, oh, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Oh,
right?
We'll see.
Yeah. I think what you were saying earlier about the ability to rebound from poor events, right, and, like, is so key. But that's almost an analogy for life. Right.
Yep.
Like, you can't worry about the past too much. Right. You can learn from it and move on. And that's it.
Yep.
Right. And that's why sport can be such a good thing for so many people to get involved in. It's why CrossFit would be great to get for people to get involved in. But it's just such a good analogy for life and not getting too stuck in the past.
Yeah. I mean, we all do it, though. Right. You get angry about something and you hold that grudge against somebody when in reality, you know, if it's worth it, let's just forgive and forget. Let's just move on. Let's, you know, if the friendship is worth it, let's just clear that stuff behind us and let's move on. And I think competition is the exact same way. You know, you gotta, hey, I just had a really bad one, but you know what? It's behind me, and I'm feeling good now, and I'm ready to roll. Good story for you. Okay.
Love it.
Okay. We love stories
okay.
on the podcast.
2013 CrossFit Games Saturday night workouts. You guys remember what it was?
2013 Saturday night.
Yep.
No.
Bar muscle up? No.
Nope. It was thruster rope climb. 95-pound bar.
Thruster rope climb. That's right.
4-3-2-1.
Legless, right?
Yep. Legless rope climb. 27, 21, 15, 9, and then 4-3-2-1 on the rope climbs.
Oh, I remember this workout.
And I walked in there. I think I was in something like 18th or 19th place. And you guys know as well as I do, you have to be in the last heat to finish well. You have to. You have to, have to, have to. If you're not in the last heat, you're taking a guess, or you're setting the time to beat, basically.
Right.
So I walked into there feeling pretty good. I knew that was my time to make my move. 95-pound thrusters all day, no problem. Legless rope climbs in that rep range, no problem. And 3-2-1 go. I knew the previous time to beat was 6:08, and I motored through the first 27, hit all four rope climbs, motored through the 21, hit all three. 15, motored through it, both the rope climbs, hit the 9, and as I was finishing the last rope climb on the set of 2, I was thinking to myself, ooh boy, I'm feeling this. My arms are going. So I get to the lineup for the last rope. I look left, and Graham Holmberg was over there. I look right, and I see Kenny Leverage. And I look up at the clock, which is right in front of me, and it said 6:03. And I'm like, this is it. This is it. I could sit here and shake my arms out all day long and feel good and let these two guys beat me and let the time before me beat me and miss my top 10 spot. Or I could take a chance and go fast and take chances. And I just thought to myself, you know what? I'm not going to sit in 17th place. I'm not going to sit in 18th place or whatever I'm in. If I end up in last place because of taking this chance, I'm going to do it. And I jumped up there. I pulled, and I got within one arm's length of the last touch, and I couldn't do it. And I fell off the rope all the way to the ground, and I did that for the next 4 minutes, and I never finished the workout. But here's the thing about it.
Oh, man, what a sad story.
I know, right? But here's the thing about it. This is what I learned from that I pass on to people at the competitors course. When that workout was over, I made a conscious decision of what my outcome could have been. Okay, I gave everything I had, and there was nothing left in the tank that I could possibly be sorry about. And I walked away with that as a victory with no sore feelings at all, because I gave every single thing that I could to put myself in the position to be in that top 10. And when that workout was over, it was over. I didn't have to think twice about it. Even though it put me in, like, I think, like 28th place or something like that, or 30th place. What was in the past was in the past, because I was happy with the outcome because of my effort more than anything.
such a good learning experience, I think. You know, like learning how to give everything in a workout, and sometimes you got to roll the dice.
You got to roll the dice.
Especially if you want to be one of the best, yep. Right? It's going to happen.
Yep. We all can pace. You can pace all day long, and you'll always finish with the paced outcome.
Yeah, you knew you could finish that workout in 7.5 minutes easily.
Exactly.
Right? But that didn't matter. That wasn't good enough for where you wanted to go.
Exactly.
And like the feeling you had afterwards, recognizing that it was a result of the full effort that you gave, that's the message that I know as a box owner, that's the message I try to get through to people. Like, your time is your time, and that's something to be proud of. But like, the thing that you really feel good about is that you showed up and went really hard. So I got members that come in and they'll work out, but they don't really go hard for whatever reason it is.
Yep.
And I can tell that they're not as satisfied.
Right, of course. They want to do more afterwards. Hey, that really encapsulates our whole discussion earlier, right? They left intensity in the bank. They didn't withdraw at all. And what do they want? They want more. They want more because of it. They're like, I can handle more. I can handle more. And it's like, you know, next time, why don't you just give me 100? And I bet you won't want any more.
It happens all the time when you program like a 7-minute AMRAP for the gym or something like that, and somebody misjudges it, takes the first 3.5 minutes like casual pace, right?
Casual, yeah.
And then they're like, they've got 3.5 minutes in. Okay, I guess I better
turn it on a little bit.
Just try a little bit, right? And by that time, kind of already set the pattern, and you know,
not that hard.
Yep. Yeah, exactly, right? Just not achieving the stimulus.
What are some of your kind of moves you're making in your life outside of training going forward? Got more time, more availability.
Yeah, so one of the things, thank you for the opportunity to plug something.
Just tee this up.
That's cool. So Train for the Win is a big project. It's born out of passion more than it is anything else. And those interested, go to trainftw.com. Expect big updates in the next month. We're working on a new website and we're going to release some new stuff. That's really cool. Three teams, strength, general and stamina, so that way I can provide you with almost individualized programming without making you pay for individualized programming. Then my wife and I are working on some nutrition stuff, which is really exciting. We've been working with personal nutrition clients on a weekly basis for a 12-week commitment and seeing just absolutely the most amazing results. We use a sustainable nutrition approach, but we also transition to using things like macros, but without losing the idea of keeping quality foods.
Can you talk about that a little bit more, like the macro idea?
Yeah, so I mean, for 7 years, for almost 10 years, I did The Zone, and which is a weighing, approach to weighing and measuring your food and quantity control, and had a lot of great results. And this question kept coming up in probably 2015 at the level ones. Hey, what about if it fits your macros or flexible dieting or quote unquote macros? And you know, my answer to that a lot of times was stupid. It was, it sounds like a lazy man's zone. Except you're not balancing 40-30-30 at every meal. You're doing it at the end of the day.
And right. Just for our listeners, if you guys don't know what this is, it's a method of quantity control where you count your macronutrients, fat, carbs, and proteins at the end of the day and try to fit within a range for each.
Yeah, a range for each, which equates to a caloric level for that's appropriate for the individual.
Right.
And so I decided to give it a shot, and the results were amazing. And I really, you know, I was taken aback by how much more precision there is with macros than there is with the zone. And I think there's an appropriate approach for each individual. The zone might be completely appropriate for, you know, this guy, but maybe macros might be more appropriate for this guy because he's just got that dedication to, you know, weigh and measure every single little thing in precise quantities. Whereas the zone doesn't really require that quite as much.
Why? But you're, if it just fits your macros, you're doing kind of one count at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
So how is it more precise than the zone?
Okay, so that's a good question. And you and I kind of talked about this before. If I look at the zone diet and I look at what a block of bacon is, and bacon is considered a protein for the zone diet, bacon is 3.5 slices for one block, okay? I would have about 4 to 5 blocks, depending on the meal, I would have 4 blocks of protein along with 4 blocks of carbs and fat. But here's the thing about this, using bacon as a source of your protein. How much of it is fat?
A huge
All
portion.
Of it.
Probably 50%.
Yeah.
Okay? And it doesn't take into any consideration that fat content in that protein source of bacon with regards to your fat intake at that meal. I still have to add 4 blocks of fat even though I'm using bacon. So the mix of actual grams of macronutrients isn't taken into account when we look at the zone. Whereas if I do macros, I enter bacon into my calorie counter and it says it's, you know, 12 grams of fat and 6 grams of protein, and now all of these things are being taken into account.
It's way more accurate.
At the end of the day, it's way more accurate. Yeah. And I can still apply the concept of 40-30-30 at every meal, which the zone requires, to macros and see the same effects in a more precise environment.
So the potential for overeating in the zone is higher.
Correct.
Right.
Overeating as in more calorie consumption.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. And, I think the big turn that people make when they start their, if it fits your macros diet, is they start playing with things like donuts and cupcakes and ice cream and all that stuff because it fits my macros. Well, I don't subscribe to that. I do think that there's room in that diet for those things, but I think there's more room for fruits, vegetables, meats, and nuts and seeds and oils and stuff like that. And then at the end of the day, if you're still craving a little bit of sugar or something like that, if it fits your macros, that's appropriate. But I think what a lot of people see is what they a lot of these, you know, flexible dieting people post on Instagram of every meal looks like it's a cheat meal.
Right.
And unfortunately, that's not sustainable nutrition.
So basically eat lean protein all day and then drink like 5 beers at night with ice cream. And they're like, oh, my macros balance out.
Yeah,
I'm good to go.
That's right. I'm eating gummy worms at the end of the day to balance everything out. And it's like, well, you know, really, that's not, it contains no micronutrients whatsoever, which does nothing for your metabolism. So, yes, you can do it. And you should do it from time to time for sanity. But it's not recommended all the time.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up because I feel like a large majority of people that look into nutrition and dieting, it's proven to work or not work based on the way their exterior body looks. If they lose weight, if they're firm, if they look the way they want to look, and filling your macronutrients with cupcakes and donuts and stuff like that doesn't always affect that. But my question to these people has always been like, do you know what you look like on the inside?
Yeah.
Like your systems. And you brought up micronutrients. Maybe you can speak a little bit to that as to, you know, what other things is nutrition doing for you other than making you look a certain way?
Yeah, okay. Just like Blair said, you know, I mean, looking fat is a clear indication that you're doing something wrong. Okay? Having excess body weight on your frame is an indication that your diet's out of whack. But there's a lot of individuals that can get away with that for a long period of time. But in reality, you know, their hormone levels are being deranged because of these things. You know, does your body see a cupcake as sugar? Yes. Does your body see an orange as sugar? Yes. But the orange contains far more micronutrients that are beneficial to your metabolism than the cupcake does. And in the long run, what you're going to find is that if you track certain markers throughout time, the cupcake is not going to pay off when it comes to your blood panel, whereas the fruits and vegetables will. Is there room for the cupcake? There absolutely is, and in fact, I encourage it if your body responds well to that once-in-a-while addition of that cupcake. But if you're having that at every meal, I'm sorry, it's not going to work out well.
One of my favorite stories about this topic is, I think I was at like a Juice Plus seminar 10 years ago, and this guy was a great speaker. And he was talking about, he was looking at labels, right, on the back of a soda bottle or whatever. And he pulled up the last label. He was talking about micronutrients and, like, phytonutrients and all these things that are great about Whole Foods. And he pulled up this last label, and it was, like, 3 pages long. He's like, what do you think this is? It was an apple. And it had, like, a million vitamins.
Oh, gotcha.
A million, like, it just tracked everything that was in an apple. And, like, all those things, they're trace amounts, right?
Right.
Like you said, over the course of time, your body needs that stuff.
Yep.
And it just, you get it in drips, but it pays off.
It does. And, you know, frankly, here's a good way of looking at this thing. If the ingredient list is longer than the vitamin and mineral list, there's a problem.
That's a good rule of thumb, right?
It is, right? I mean, if basically, if it comes in a package, be wary. Be wary. Chances are it's processed, and there's the most likely the potential of additional sugar being added to that. And sugar is an anti-nutrient. Does your body need it? Of course it does. Okay? But does it need refined sugar consistently over a lifetime? Nope. That's how you develop type 2 diabetes. Heart disease.
Well, so moving forward the rest of the weekend, you know, just looking at the games, looking at who's on the field, who do you like on the ladies' side?
Ladies' side, you know, I mean, I think it's still too early to tell. I mean, we're halfway through Friday, and they've done just Murph so far, right? Yep, okay.
Four events.
Yeah, they're four events in out of 15.
Five. They had to swim, too.
Yep. Oh, okay, five events in out of 15. And it's really hard to say. So I'm going to say who I want to win. How about that?
There you go.
Even better.
That's the best.
I love the Icelandic girls. I think they're really fun to watch. I think they have the greatest attitude. So I'd love to see those guys on the podium. But then, of course, I'm gonna root for my neighbor, Cam. I'd love to see her end up on the podium again, first time since 2014. And I think she's got the ability to do it in the long run up throughout the weekend.
Yeah, really cool. And on the men's side?
Of course, I love Ben. You know, he's not only a rogue athlete, but just a great dude to be around.
I don't know if you remember this. In 2011,
okay,
maybe, that was my best year at the games. I took fifth. We were in the final heat together most of the weekend.
Yep.
And Ben was not having a great weekend
right
that year. He had a good year in 2010.
Also in 2012, he did pretty well.
Right. I remember having the conversation with you and a few other people. I think Savon might have been there. And it was like, you're like, look at that guy. He's like, Ben didn't look like much.
Right.
Skinny. Okay, he's like that is the future of CrossFit. That guy. Because he's
young.
Explosive, young, strong.
Humble. Smart.
Super humble. And that's the truth. It totally came to be. He's, what, 8 years in a row.
Yep.
He's going to keep going as long as he's healthy.
Yep.
And I don't know. I have that memory. It was great.
I think Ben's going to be a top runner for a podium spot for sure. I think Josh Bridges, it would be great to see him back on the podium since 2011, I believe it was. But holy cow, how are you going to beat Matt Frazier right now? I mean, it's going to take some devastating workouts to take him off the top. He looks so good this year. I mean, his body weight, his movement, his running, his swimming. I was not prepared for what I saw on that 7K run. I was not prepared for that. Did you guys see the video of him sprinting down the hill?
I didn't see the video.
No.
We ran that hill.
Yeah.
Running down that hill is insane from where you touch and then turn around.
Yeah, you don't run down that.
You don't run down that. He ran down that, and it was amazing to watch somebody actually push down that hill rather than holding on to leaves as they're kind of walking backwards.
Yeah, you're kind of supposed to skate down that hill, like slide.
Dude, he looks so good, and I mean, you know, his body holds up throughout the weekend. He's going to be on top. He's so great. Matt, you heard me say it. I love you. I hope you pull it off. And then Ben, I hope you give him a run for your money.
It's so good to see him dueling.
Yep.
At the end.
Yeah, awesome, man. So if people want to follow you and kind of what you're going to be doing here with your nutrition and you know, programming and even the seminars, how should they follow you?
Yeah, follow at Train for the Win. That's at Train FTW. Actually, at Train underscore FTW. On Instagram and Twitter, and me, I'm at Matt1Chan on Instagram and Twitter, and then you guys can always email me too. I'm throwing it out there, matt@trainforthewin.com. You guys, I'll correspond with anybody, so shoot me an email if you need anything, and we'll sort some things out.
Awesome. And if you guys want to follow us, check us out on our new Snapchat or our Twitter account. Snap is Beyond BTB Podcast. Twitter is Beyond underscore Barbell. And then obviously on our Instagram, we have some cool videos from this weekend at BTB Podcast. Check out Blair's account, my account, and we'll catch you guys in the next interview.
Thanks, guys.